I'd like to welcome everyone this morning or this afternoon, depending on where you are. My name is Janet Cornwell. I'm a member of the High Watch and an interning mentor with the Prosperos. And I am pleased to welcome all of you to the Prosperos Sunday meeting today. The Prosperos is a school of ontology, the science or study of being. Our goal is to make spiritual truth an effective force for ordered freedom and common good. We work toward this goal by transcending the ancient definition of man as limited by dimension, expectations, and learned behaviors. Our teachings draw from many disciplines and philosophies, creating our unique approach to finding and realizing each person's true identity as beingness and consciousness. For the immediate future, we're taking a summer off from classes. Although we may set up some workshops, the big event for the year will be our virtual assembly at the end of September. We hope all of you will join us for a great weekend in the Zoom room. More information will be available in the weeks ahead, so please watch for news on our website, and we will be sending out information in little notices and in the monthly community update. I will put the link for event information in the chat box toward the end of the meeting. Information about our activities, as I say, is posted on our website, and please do keep checking the calendar because it gets updated regularly. Now, let's have a moment of settling and stillness before we have our talk for the day. Our speaker today is Pam Rodolph, a Prosperos High Watch mentor. Over several decades, she has served the Prosperos in many capacities in many locations, and she has many stories to tell about the school's history. Currently, Pam lives in Oklahoma with her beloved cohort of dogs, horses, and houseguests. From there, she hosts our Friday night online discussion group and participates in a number of the school's communications projects and a few things of her own. Today, Pam will be celebrating a late Father's Day by remembering famous dads in history, noting changes in the understanding of fatherhood over the past few decades, and considering what this may mean for humanity. She has a few surprises for us, but I'll let her introduce those. And now, and we will turn the podium over to Pam.
First off, that was quite a great introduction. I mean, I didn't have to give her anything. She asked for stuff, and you really did well. I would never thought of that. But like she said, because it is the month of Father's Day, I'm not going to, I hope none of you are disappointed. I'm not going to get into the archetype so much as our actual fathers. And how like Janet said, how the role of fatherhood has changed in the past 30 to 50 years. Now, my own father, and I use him as an example because he's kind of typical of men back then, but he was a quiet, stabilizing force in the family, but he seldom, if ever, expressed emotion. And I think that delayed my ability to see human qualities in men. It was hard for me to connect to their emotional life. At one time, I was shocked to even find out they had an emotional life. If you all remember back in the 50s, you'll remember the same things, I bet. I thought my father had no real connections to the family because of my inability to tie him into my emotional life. But that was because he hid behind my mother, like many fathers did in those days. She was blocking my view of him. And men of his age and back then, they did so little of the child rearing that the lack of hands-on contact caused them to even be afraid of their children. What I mean by that is afraid that they would do something to jeopardize their children's good opinion of them. They weren't afraid that they'd get hurt, you know. So they would direct their wives in many of the decisions from the wings, so to speak, pushing her to do all the unpleasant things. My father was old school. He believed in and always presented himself with dignity. He was principled, believed in fair play and the worth of the individual. In my 20s, I asked him what intelligence was, and he said, it is the ability to apply principle to the relative, which to me would include translation. But he loved logic and math, and I honestly feel he would have been much more comfortable in the Prosperos than in Christianity. But like I said, my mother stood in the way. It was actually through my brother, many of you who know, that I was able to really connect to men. I mean, I saw through his reactions and responses that he was no different than me. And consequently, I began to see that in other men too. Our lives have been so, he and my life have been so intertwined that there are so many times I would have said exactly the same thing, using exactly the same words, the same attitude, same feelings, same actions. I mean, we are practically twins, and we're 7 years apart, but I mean, six. Now, but that made me think of a quote from Wuthering Heights when Catherine says, Heathcliff is me and I am him. My great miseries in this world have been Heathcliff's miseries, and I watched and felt each from the beginning. I know my father thought he was setting a good example, remaining calm in the midst of dysfunction. But I now think that men too should express their emotional life to their children. Empathy is hard without those emotional connections to both sexes. Even the best of parents should anger us at times. For better or worse, we should fear their disapproval, experience their tears at times of grief, get caught up in their excitement over challenges met. Our fathers need to show their anger, their sympathy, their failures and how they overcome them, their successes and their affection. Emotions are the doorways into the spiritual realm. We can use their energy and power to springboard us into the absolute. And somehow, and we initially we learn our emotional responses from both parents. I mean, it should be from both parents. Now, I had another father, and all of you did too, whose name was Thane. He was father to many children, and what he gave us, no one else would or did or could, the truth. Now, men have been in charge of the human race as far back as my studies go. Now, I don't want any women start throwing knives at me, but I question whether it's been the bed of roses that everyone seems to think it's been. I mean, have they really had all the fun while we poor suffering women or have the burden of being controlled by men? We're starting to catch up, but the last I checked, men still lead in the Department of Heart Attacks. But that's not the only way that they pay for the control that they have to exert. At one time, it was not manly for men to participate in the hands-on care of their children. They often missed the thrill of hearing their first words, seeing their first steps, watching their first triumphs, watching consciousness in the raw grow in a child, just beings the pure in all of us. I mean, I have been completely awestruck watching a child warily, then full tilt, overcome some fear of theirs. And men who miss that have a harder time connecting to their family, especially their children. Because of that, many men have missed out on the emotional nourishment families can have for us, even feeling on the outside of their families. To me, men don't look like they're doing too well. Control is exhausting, and most of the time it's unfulfilling. And I've seen what control does to men. You all have too, and it's not pretty. Just watch our presidents. They turn gray practically overnight. I swear, if you were to ask Attila the Hun, free of all peer pressure, what he really wanted to be doing, he'd probably say off fishing or golfing or starting a writing career. But I just offer this up to remind us nothing is as lopsided as we get to thinking it is. In general, men have control because that's what we asked of them. And with emancipation, women can no longer expect men to carry our strength or to fulfill our every wish to be our Prince Charming. They can no longer be the shield that protects us women from life. And that's why many women are just as stuck in the old paradigm of machoism as the men are. They don't want to give up that big, strong man, weak, helpless female illusion. And believe me, I live in a land where that is still very much alive. We women need to start helping men turn this thing around. We have to free them from our demands and stop seeing them as the enemy. I've got friends that have made whole identities out of men are to blame for almost everything. It's no longer true that men are in control of us because they hold all the political power. Before long, men will get to start bitching that women are in control. The truth is, men were never in charge of our internal life. I mean, okay, accuse them, shine the light on injustice, warn other women, but for God's sake, move on. I realize that sounds insensitive, and it probably is strange coming from me, but if you don't know how to move on, just ask us. We're well into the emancipation that Thane talked about, I believe. And men are the last section of humanity to find freedom. And part of that emancipation is to let go of some of the power they have always wielded. And that is another thing driving some of the insanity we see today, because this kind of loss is especially hard for men who identify themselves in a macho way. Those men who are able to change find it easier to relax into new roles of nurturing and family participation. I titled this Who's Your Daddy Now in reference to the change in the roles of fatherhood over the last 50 years. Men are no longer the silent partner in the business of family. Every young man in my family seems to put more emphasis on the family than even their jobs. They would be horrified to miss the birth of their children. They research diets, medical care, safety of toys. They change diapers, wash loads of clothes, cart their kids to activities. And if you haven't caught up, this is today's man. I thought it'd be interesting to share a few facts about some of the fathers of history, starting with the Neanderthal. The Neanderthal father, there's 2% of Europeans and Asians that have Neanderthal DNA. And interesting, blacks have none. Now, Neanderthal DNA is greatly responsible for boosting the immune system, but it is generally felt that fertile offspring could not have been had obtained by mating a Neanderthal and a Homo sapiens. From Neanderthal to some of the doting dads in history, one of which was Thomas More, he provided his three daughters with the same classical education he provided for his son. Theodore Roosevelt said that his father was the best man he ever knew. Charles Darwin had 10 children that he was completely devoted to and was devastated when a 10-year-old daughter died. His other children remembered him as a loving storyteller who took interest in their lives and encouraged their freedom. But the role of fatherhood doesn't change just in time, it changes the world over. In Amazonia, children are believed to have several biological fathers, and they call this is known as partible paternity. The NA Society of China, which is a matrilineal society, matrons, female, the matrilineal men, the uncles and brothers of the child and the mother are responsible for supervising, caring for, and educating the children. And they don't care who the biological father is. In Central African Republic, fathers are known for holding their infants 22% of the time and showing more affection to them than the women do. It's been shown that a father's strong and affirmative relationship with particularly male children may attenuate the adverse effects of antisocial and criminal behavior on the part of the father. That includes conduct problems, substance abuse, mental health disorders, and poor academic achievement. These are in the kids. I mean, I'm not talking about the father now. I don't know that it has been done or even thought about, but it seems to me that it would be good for prisons to have programs that encourage father children child relationships and even provide areas for them to interact. Because I think particularly in the poor section, it's common for sons to follow their fathers into crime and into prison. But with strong father-child relationship, that can be completely wiped out. If we survive the collateral damage of change that we're going through, there's a kinder society consciousness is sweeping us towards, with greater emphasis on mental health. I believe it took thousands of years for us to evolve and conquer the earth, so to speak. But conquering the earth only ensured our survival. It didn't ensure our mental health. And I think that's fallen to the modern man. I think that's become our job. In conflicts with each other, there is no infamous us and them. Whatever finality they undergo, so will we. Whatever is our fate is also theirs. There's only one earth, and eventually that's going to matter. We have to find a way to nurture those who are falling behind, those who are increasingly becoming the other, particularly those who are reacting to this new definition of manhood. The more men that involve themselves in nurturing the family, the more sane I believe society will become. We need to stop stressing the differences between us and them and look for commonality, for inclusiveness. I mean, I live in the world of them, including all my neighbors, and I love my neighbors. We get along great. Even the neighbor across the street that has the life-size wood statue of Trump holding a flag in his front yard. Personally, I'm just wondering where we're headed from here. Why are all these roles changing in this 100-year section? What is the point? What will we do with all that sanity? So here's my utopia. First off, I think that there are ever greater levels of sanity that may bring powers we currently would label as hoodoo. I mean, even now, sometimes intuition is so strong it can feel like telepathy. I've had forays into higher mind that temporarily gave me powers that just turned my world upside down and would truly qualify for our idea of magic. Now, I don't think all this is for the purpose of producing well-behaved citizens, which is what would be the standard of mental health for today. I don't think mental health sits down and gets comfortable. I think it's dynamic in itself, ever-evolving. Consciousness is a comet that will always be shooting across the sky, leaving behind a tale of collateral damage that I believe a new nurturing human race has been put here to attend. That may be a stretch, but someday we may nurture other races on other planets into adulthood. Humans, plants, and animals continue to evolve to new, adapting to new environments. Some speculate that humans may evolve further in the following ways. We may regrow limbs, become smaller, develop cameras for eyes. We'll have smaller brains, which has already happened. We will have fewer teeth, smaller jaws. We will live considerably longer. We will become less aggressive and more agreeable. Now, survival of the fittest has become reproduction of the fittest. And this is a quote from the article, Future Evolution. From looks to brains and personality, how will humans change in the next 10,000 years? By Nicholas Longridge. Mr. Longridge says, and if nature doesn't control our evolution anymore, the unnatural environment we've created, culture, technology, cities, produces new selective pressures that are very unlike those we faced in the Ice Age. We are poorly adapted to this modern world. It follows that we'll have to adapt. And that process has already started. In the not too far future, we will routinely live to 100. And I mean, I see that already happening. Low mortality rates bring about changes in the speed of growth and evolution, such as now, when evolution slows down, development is greater. So because of the complexities of our world today, children in general are not ready to face the world until they're 40 years old. I'd rethink having kids if I was you. They used to be ready. We used to be ready at 20. Now, on Galapagos Island, and this won't be any big news to anybody here, but the Greenland sharks, Galapagos tortoises, and bowhead whales, they mature very late and can live for centuries. Centuries. That is because they have no predators, and no predators is the single most factor affecting lifespan. Now, back to our Neanderthal father. He had a lifespan of 35 years. Half of his kids didn't live, and half of those didn't even reach 15, the age of 15. When we did away with the effect that predators have on lifespan, life expectancy soared to 70 years worldwide in 80 in developed countries. We've grown considerably taller and gracile. Our brain size, this gets me, our brain size peaked 10 to 20,000 years ago. We've already gone through as good as it's going to get. Then our brains began to get smaller. Our brains are smaller even than our medieval ancestors. Einstein's brain was smaller than average. Now, while you're trying to separate yourself from your Neanderthal ancestor, I'm sorry to say your brain is about the same size his was. He just used it differently than we do. Now, the gist of all of this, Longrich, Mr. Longrich says, our personalities must be evolving too. Hunter-gatherers' lives required aggression. They hunted large mammals, killed over partners, and warred with neighboring tribes. We get meat from a store and turn to police and courts to settle disputes. Now, here is the most important statement of this. If war hasn't disappeared, it now accounts for fewer deaths relative to population than at any time in history. Aggression, now a maladaptive trait, could be bred out and probably will be. Now, I have a different attitude, I mean, a viewpoint than the doomsday thing, because I don't see that at all. You know, everything in us may want to refute the statement war accounts for fewer deaths than at any other time, but we have a habit now of saying, oh, the world is so violent, you know, we're really headed for the end. And what images do we bring up? If we don't bring up war images, we bring up school shootings, terrorists. These have become our violence now. Those are like single digits. One shooter, 12 students, two teachers. We can relate to that. They're people. You can't cozy up to a regimen. You know, so we don't feel war like we do school shootings and terrorists because it's individual. It's something we can relate to and empathize with. And so it makes us feel like everything's getting more violent because now we relate to it. Whereas before we'd see, you know, all these regiments of soldiers going off and okay, well, let's hope they make it and go on about our business. So I think that we think the world is getting more violent when actually it's slowly moving in the opposite direction. All right, now, I also think that the war with Ukraine had so much attention put on it, maybe because war is becoming novel. In my utopia, when aggression lessens, we better be ready to accommodate the millions of people that would have died in wars, domestic violence, terrorist attacks. But can you imagine the creativity that's going to unleash? I mean, you might want to leave that 30-year-old down your basement alone. He might be just building the steps to another dynasty of wealth, become the next Bill Gates. I mean, the fascination of seeing a light in your control dance across a screen, doing flip-flops and kung fu on something called a computer, created more millionaires than anything ever before. And shifted the number one means of wealth from oil, steel, and shipping to information. It seems logical that the rate of societal and environmental, I guess, yeah, changes will become astronomical, just as Thane predicted. I envision that translation will be seen as the thinking process and will be used more for invention and discovery than for self-reflection, as aggression will be at an all-time low, although self-reflection will always be a part of the thinking process. We don't use 90% of our brains, not because we're idiots, but because we haven't needed them. As we become less aggressive and creativity becomes a bigger society driver, we will visit that other 90% more often and for longer periods of time. And by the way, if you believe that aggression is necessary to grow and evolve, to be the negative factor of the Trinity, there's something more basic than aggression, and that's constriction, limitation. We don't need aggression for that. It's breaking the boundaries of constriction and limitation that shoots us into the higher realms of mind. Aggression is actually a byproduct of constriction. But whatever world we're building towards, we're well on our way, and not the most stubborn obstacle on earth is going to stop it. Defying the entire history of the human race, the working paradigm has become stronger women, softer men. This is the working formula that's called to face today's world. Balance with a capital B. This is such a significant change. At some point, it may affect our DNA. Speaking of our DNA, fathers contribute the following attributes to their children: gender, personality, fat storage, height, dental health, and heart disease. Whereas the mother's DNA contributes to mitochondria, intelligence, weight, hemophilia. Some of the differences between our fathers and mothers is men have more vascular structures in their face, so they're more prone to bleeding and scarring, but their skin is 25% thicker than ours. Due to skin color, in general, women have a higher contrast of eyes and lips. Men have a larger voice box, which is why their voice is deeper than the mother's. Now, interesting, there's no difference in their contribution to DNA in personality, cognitive ability, and leadership. It was once thought that women were too frail and in health and personality to serve in leadership roles, but that's not true. Now, a man's job today, besides being one of the breadwinners, and you notice I said one of the breadwinners, that changed also. But the modern man has a new job, that of picking up his children. When a father picks up a child, it's a spiritual transaction. When a father picks up a child, its child's perspective changes. The father is essentially pulling the child into his world. If your daughter sneaks out of the house and comes home drunk, it doesn't matter. Pick her up. If your son messes up, it doesn't matter. Pick him up. When they're too big to pick up, pick them up spiritually and emotionally. One father picked up a whole nation of children and marched them to freedom with one single speech. I have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream. That one day this nation, this world will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal. I have a dream. And that is a father's final job, to encourage his children's dreams. Don't make it easy for them to give up on them. It's also a father's job to equip his children with the confidence to face life no matter what comes their way. Martin Luther King did what he did, not for a nation, but for his four children. As men become, the world over, become a bigger part of their children's lives, they will be less likely to throw that deadly switch that ends us all. If there's one lesson to be learned from the pandemic, it was just how small this planet Earth really is. For a short time, and think about it, and for the first time in history, almost every human being on Earth knew the same information and acted on it. It showed us just how connected we are. If just one human being gets a deadly virus to which we have no defense, it will rush to cover the world at an alarming speed. We stayed home for 1 year, and the lakes and rivers almost completely recovered from the damage we do to them. showing us that all those little boring decisions we make every day on a daily basis are not insignificant. They do not happen in a vacuum, but reach out with minute unseen hands to latch onto the first thing they touch, first person they touch. My decision today to speak sharply to a stranger may be carried by an unsuspecting host to infect not just him, but everybody he comes into contact with. With my decision to speak sharply to a stranger today, tomorrow that infection may reach some father in Japan who will pause to reflect on what a cold place this world is. And as he drains his energy with such thoughts, some child will not get picked up today. Now, I have got one last thought. As aggression lessens, bad moods, dysfunction, control freaking, almost everything that is the human condition will start to lessen. And the human condition is on its way to change forever. And if we can't see that, then we're part of the problem because this vision does not inform the soul. The soul informs our vision. And if you haven't done sufficient work on yourself to see aggression lessen in yourself, then you won't believe what I'm saying. The insanity we've seen in the last few years is the death throes of a passing paradigm. It's not the end of our world. When I entered the Crossroads all those years ago, I could not have held it in my heart because my heart would not have tolerated it. I tried to keep that a secret. But as I've worked these methods through the years, I never thought or believed that could change until it did. I'm not a proto-mutant. I had to work myself free from that past, and I am a latecomer. But ever since that final tick of change, when my heart rebooted itself and reoriented me towards the East, I have an unshakable confidence in the future of the human race. In my utopia, and if you don't have a utopia, go get one. Our fathers are joining our mothers to usher us to a future. The quality most valued will be wisdom above all else. This utopia is not that far-fetched as our disconnected fathers connect with their families and their own souls.
Thank you. It was a great look into the masculine elements, expectations, and possibilities around us and within us. So, thank you all for your interest and attention. I'll just end with the short meditation.
We are closing this very beautiful meeting with some very beautiful words. We are closing with a transcendental interpretation of the Lord's Prayer. Thane wrote this transcendental interpretation. You may like to follow it. You find it on the back of your program. Father, who art in the highest and the lowest, the first and the last, thy name is on the heavens and the earth, for thou art all. Thy kingdom, the sphere of thy rulership, is within me. Seeing which, I may enter into thy wholeness and thy perfection. Thy will is the ruling power in the heavens and the earth. Thus it is well with me and all men. Thank you. Thou art this day my inexhaustible supply, feeding me with living bread and clothing me with the raiment of thy righteousness. Thou hast always given me thyself for myself and the power to transcend my nature in receiving thine. Thou hast always set before me the task of accepting my divinity, whereby I am delivered from myself into thyself. For thine, mine, ours is the kingdom, the power that rules therein, and the glory of our own creation. So it is. Thanks for meeting with us today. Keep coming back.